National Youth Administration presents Wisconsin Anna, a saga of Wisconsin historical lore written and presented by students of the NYA Radio Workshop at Radio Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Designed to provide young men and women with a proving ground for their writing and dramatic talents, and to aid them in continuing their education, the workshop is established under John Fayville, Jr., State Youth Administrator, as part of the NYA Student Aid Program. Today's broadcast is one of a series written about some familiar relic in the State Historical Museum. Here's our friend, the old-timer.
You know, if you folks have ever visited the State Historical Museum at Madison, you'll remember the old carriage that once belonged to Daniel Webster. Here it stands in all its glory, the shabby remnant of another century. More than a century ago, it was a familiar sight on the streets of Boston and in the quaint villages around Cape Cod, where Marshfield, the Webster summer home, was located. Drawn by four fine bays, the prettiest horse flesh you ever laid your eyes on, the Webster carriage must have been quite a sight. Daniel Webster was always one to cut a fine figure, and he was never known to skimp on style. The story of how Daniel Webster obtained his carriage involves one of the most sensational murder cases of the last century. Few people remember the tales of the White Murder, nor do many recall the once famous stories of Webster's part in that trial. Our story opens in a carriage shop in London, one fine spring day in the year 1808. An American, Stephen White of Boston, is inspecting a new carriage.
Ah, what have we here? A new model, Jameson?
Aye, sir. The first one we've turned out. Firm in the shaft of the nearest oil lamps. See, the reflectors are built in. My own idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, looks strong enough. But we travel great distances in America, you know, Jameson. I might want to go to Philadelphia or even Washington. Is this new coach of yours constructed along strong enough lines for a long trip such as that?
Mr. White, I promise you, I guarantee you, in fact, that this carriage will outlive you. Why, I'd be willing to wager that you will still be using it in the year 1900.
Oh, it's a fair wager, Jameson. I'm afraid I won't take you up on it. Possible that we might have some new means of transportation by then. Look here, how about these wheels?
They are just what you need, sir, for those long trips you plan to take. These wheels are dished to provide better road traction.
Oh, I see.
And here on the rear, here's a device to fasten hampers and trunks.
Well, Stephen White bought Jameson's new carriage and paid for it in gold. He brought it back with him to Boston and used it for several years. But the long trips he had counted on didn't take place. For Stephen's uncle, old Captain Joseph White of Salem, took to ailing and liked to have his favorite nephew close by. Stephen and his wife often drove up on the warm evenings to enjoy the breeze in the bay and sit a while with the old man.
Hey, here they come, Nelly. Call the boy to take the horses and set the teapot on. Hey there!
Hello, Uncle. How are you tonight? Hey, boy.
Yeah, it's good to see you, Stephen. And you, my dear, how pretty you look.
Oh, thank you, Uncle Joseph. But you shouldn't flatter me so. Stephen thinks me quite vain already.
He should be proud of you, my dear. Prettiest girl on Boston Hill.
I agree with you, Uncle. But I don't dare tell her so, not that we're married now.
The Whites were a devoted family. Stephen was very close to his uncle. Thus, the strange happenings in Salem in early April 1830 came as a complete shock to him, and a severe one. He was seated at his desk and Boston's hub section one morning when the tragic news reached him.
Mr. White. Mr. White, sir.
Yes, Lewis, what is it?
A messenger from Salem, sir, with bad news, I fear. Your uncle, sir.
Uncle Joseph? Well, what's happened to him? Is he... Your uncle, sir. Captain Joseph White has been found murdered.
What?
Murdered? Call my carriage. I'm going to Salem at once.
Old Captain White, 82-year-old merchant, loved and respected by the whole community, was murdered in his own bed and found there next morning by his housekeeper. The whole town of Salem was set in a flurry of excitement. A vigilance committee was organized. Its members pledged to spare no efforts in tracing down the murderer. Bits of evidence turned up here and there. But the real clue appeared in a blackmail note sent to Captain Joseph J. Knapp, Sr.
What have we here? A post from Belfast. Well, let me see here. I merely tell you that I am acquainted with your brother, Franklin, and also the business he was transacting for you on the 2nd of April last, and that I think that you were very extravagant in giving £1,000 to the person that would execute the business for you. This must be meant for someone else. Surely to me. Wait! There may be a clue in this for the Vigilance Committee. I'd best report it at tonight's meeting.
Gentlemen, we are gathered here to report on our search for the perpetrator of the recent crime, which has soiled our community's fair name. Captain Knapp has the floor. Captain Knapp.
I am in receipt of a strange communication. Gentlemen, posted from Belfast, Maine. Let me read to you from it. Strange, isn't it, how crime will out. Little did the good Captain Knapp realize by reading the note, he sounded the death knell for two of his own sons, Francis and Joseph Knapp, Jr., for whom the note was intended. For no sooner had the Vigilance Committee heard the letter read than they sent a trusted messenger to Maine to find the writer. He, too, was a criminal and a former associate of Crowninshield. He had overheard the meeting on a deserted Massachusetts road one night in March.
Who there? That's you, Knapp.
Yes. Had some trouble finding this place. Well, what's your answer?
I'll do it. But the price is the same. $1,000. And in gold.
Well, that's a big price. My brother will be able to raise it and pay you.
And when do I get the money?
When the job's done.
One thing more. Where do I find him, this brother of yours, for the one with the gold?
I'll meet you with the money.
Oh, I don't take any chances. I may have to leave in a hurry. What's his name? Where do I find him?
Joseph Knapp, Jr. at Wenham.
Joseph Knapp, Jr.
The blackmailer, overhearing this conversation, decided to capitalize on it. His error in addressing the note to the right, Joseph Knapp, gave away the whole intrigue. The Knapp brothers were arrested, and the motive for the murder soon became apparent. Joseph Knapp's mother-in-law was Captain White's niece and housekeeper. If he died without a will, she would receive a larger portion of the estate. Joseph Knapp destroyed the will and prepared the scene for the murder, which was committed by Francis Knapp's hireling. On the third day of his imprisonment, Joseph Knapp confessed. Hearing of Knapp's confession, Crowninshield hanged himself, leaving the two brothers to be tried and punished for murder. The trial created a stir through all of New England. People rushed for seats in the courtroom, for the prosecuting attorney was the brilliant young Boston lawyer, Daniel Webster.
Your Honor, gentlemen of the jury, although I could well have wished to shun this occasion, I did not feel at liberty to withhold my professional assistance when it was believed that I might be of some assistance and in some degree useful in investigating and discovering the truth respecting this most extraordinary murder. In this court, nothing can be carried against the law, and an intelligent and just jury cannot, by any power, be hurried beyond the evidence.
Your Honor?
Court recognizes Mr. Gardner.
Your Honor, I refer the jury to the statute which places public prosecutions under the direction and control of officers of the state. We of the defense understand that Mr. Webster is to receive a compensation for his services from a private prosecutor. and we question the right of a private individual to retain counsel to aid the law officers of the government in effecting a conviction for a crime punishable by death.
Your Honor, I am appearing solely at the request of the Attorney General and without any pecuniary inducement. I have not received and shall not receive any fee in this case.
And so the trial proceeded, with the interest divided between the details of the Knapp brothers' conviction and the right of the young lawyer to prosecute the case. Right or no right, Daniel Webster was making a name for oratory which was to spread throughout the United States and bring him fame. His description of the murderer's sense of guilt has never been surpassed.
He thinks the whole world sees it in his face, reads it in his eyes, and almost hears it in the very silence of his thoughts. It has become his master. It betrays his discretion. It breaks down his courage. It conquers his prudence. When suspicions from without begin to embarrass him, the fatal secret struggles with even greater violence to break forth. It must be confessed. It will be confessed. There is no refuge from confession but suicide. And suicide is confession!
The Knapp brothers were convicted and hanged. And Daniel Webster turned from criminal prosecutions to politics. Before long, in less than 6 years, he was running for the presidency of the United States with Martin Van Buren as his opponent. Although he was defeated, the young Webster's rise to political prominence was phenomenal. After the White trial, the incident of Webster's recompense as prosecutor was soon forgotten, but items in the press proved that Daniel Webster and Stephen White, legatee of his uncle's will, continued to be close friends. Then, in 1832...
I say, Susan, did you see this note in the transcript?
What's that?
Daniel Webster and the new Mrs. Webster will stay at Marshfield and other spots in Cape Cod during August and September, passing their days in hunting, fishing, and sailing on their beautiful yacht, the Calypso.
Yes, I saw it. Everybody's saying that Stephen White bought that boat and gave it to Webster as a gift. I don't know what to think.
And in 1833...
I see here that Daniel Webster's about to take a trip west. Mrs. Webster and their daughter are going with him as far as Albany in the latter part of May. And his good friend Mr. Stephen White is going along.
Have you heard the news? Stephen White's daughter Caroline is going to marry Fletcher Webster, Daniel Webster's son. That should be a big wedding.
Well, I doubt if there's any living person who knows exactly when and under what circumstances the carriage belonging to Stephen White passed into the hands of Daniel Webster. It's an unanswered question. But this much is certain. Had the Boston gossips got wind of the change of ownership, it would have made a good story for them. Later on, Fletcher Webster took possession of his father's famed carriage, and you may wonder how this famous vehicle happens to be in our own historical library. Well, its proud designer, the Cockney Mr. Jameson, wasn't far wrong when he prophesied that it would last until the turn of the century. It lived to see the coming of the automobile, and I'll wager it could still be used with four fine bays to pull it.
The historical sketch you've just heard was prepared by students in the Wisconsin NYA workshop at Radio Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin, in cooperation with Dr. Charles E. Brown, director of the State Historical Museum. The dialogue of the White court trial was adapted for radio from actual court records, as noted in the biographies of Daniel Webster.